Welcome everyone to the afternoon sessions of the GraduCon Career Conference. Welcome to this panel, which is focusing on careers in museum education. My name is Michael O'Toole. I am assistant director in the graduate career development team at UChicago Grad. And I'm really excited for the discussion that we'll be having in today's Careers in Museum Education panel. I just wanted to remind everyone that after today's session, which will last until 2:20 p.m., there is the final session of the afternoon with several additional panels that might be of interest to you. It's already registered for those panels, you can find the links to the webinars for those panels at grad.uchicago.edu, GraduCon. For those of you who are in some webinars this morning, you already know some of the practicalities. But just as a recap, or for those who might be joining us for their first GraduCon today, as an audience, you will be able to submit questions to the panel by using the Q&A button at the bottom of your Zoom screen. We'll be taking questions in written form, so just click on that Q&A button and type in for the panel. We'll kind of switch about halfway through to taking some questions that have been submitted through that Q&A feature. You also have the opportunity to upvote questions that you like, that you would particularly like the panel potentially to address, and you can do that by clicking on the thumbs up button next to the question. Hopefully we'll get a lot of questions. Of course, we can't address every question in the Q&A feature, but we hope that they spark conversation and discussion that is useful and valuable for all of you. Please use the chat feature only if you have a technical issue that you'd like to notify the staff of. I want to just briefly mention who is on the panel today before allowing the panelists and the moderator themselves to give fuller self-introductions. So we have four panelists. The panelists are Heather Barnes, director of the aquatics and life shows at the Shedd Aquarium, Megan Dunning, Melanie Garcia Simpson, curatorial associate at the Block Museum of Art at Northwestern University, and Lucas Livingston, assistant director, accessibility and lifelong learning at Art Institute of Chicago. Our moderator today is Jean M. Evans, and is the deputy director and chief curator of the Oriental Institute. We'd love to know who is in the audience for today's webinar. So please just let us know in the first question if you're a master's student, PhD, or some other status, and what division you're a part of. I'll just give you a moment to fill out. So it looks like we have a majority of PhD students in the audience at 60%, 36% master's students, and a few postdocs as well. In terms of the divisions, greatest representation in the humanities division, but certainly a representation also in the social science division, but certainly representation from a wide scope of divisions and research areas. So now I'd like to just pass it along to our moderator to start with the introductions.
All right, thank you. So Michael, thank you for putting this panel together. And as he told you, my name is Jean Evans, and I'll be moderating the panel today. And I, you know, in the next about hour and 20 minutes, we'd like to be able to communicate, I think, two main things to you. One, we hope that by showing our diverse backgrounds academically and in work, that there are a lot of different ways that you can come to work in museums, and people have a lot of different backgrounds, and sometimes the takeaway may be that there's no one specific way to find your way into a museum. and successfully get a job in a museum. But at the same time, we also hope to offer practical advice, just drawing on our own experiences. So for the first about 40 minutes, we will be having a discussion among ourselves, and then I'm hoping that we can open up to any questions that you might have. So please do use the question function so that we know what you'd like to know about specifically. So we were briefly introduced, but I was hoping that now we might be able to each introduce ourselves. And, you know, I think one thing that you must be curious about if you're here listening to this panel is also just to get a little bit of our background and how we went from our graduate degrees to our positions. And so we might briefly touch upon that in addition to describing what we do now. And if this brings up any follow-up questions, please do go ahead and pose them to us. And as I said, in the second half, we can look at those more specifically. So I have a PhD, just to begin, I have a PhD in archaeology. And I came pretty direct to museums, but then later in a roundabout way, because already when I was a graduate student, I had an internship. It was a full-time internship that I was offered. I was going to school in New York, and I was an pre-PhD student, and I ended up working at the Metropolitan Museum. And I had a year-long fellowship that I went there full-time to work, and it paid, you know, like a full-time job. And I got that renewed a second year. And then there was an opening in the department and I started working there. So that was a really wonderful and direct way. But in a sense, now looking back, because this was about almost, well, I would say it was about, well, about 20 years ago at this point. But looking back, you know, I started and I was still in graduate school. So, you know, I took my exams and I wrote my dissertation, and my degree wasn't only in art history and archaeology. It wasn't just in art history, but it's also in archaeology. You know, and I wanted to get a lot of fieldwork experience that I couldn't get while I was working full time. So after working at the Metropolitan Museum for almost a decade, I actually decided to leave. And then I had a rather itinerant lifestyle. For about 7 or 8 years, I was teaching, I had visiting positions, I had fellowships, I moved to Germany, I moved back again, and then I ended up in the job that I have now that I've had for 4 years. What I like about my job now, and I couldn't have predicted how I could have planned to end up here, but I ended up at the Oriental Institute on campus, and this is a great combination. It's not only a museum with a world-class collection, but it's in an academic department. So it took kind of the two sides of the work I had been doing up until I started about 4 years ago, and it combined them in a wonderful way. But at the same time, I will say, I don't think I could have planned to have that background that could combine successfully what the Oriental Institute was looking for if I had really planned it. It's just sort of what happened along the way. But anyway, but if someone else would like to introduce themselves in more detail, please chime in.
I can probably jump in there. Hi. Folks. So I'm Megan Denning. I manage the adult learning programs at the Morton Arboretum. And I get a lot of folks asking me what that means. So the Morton Arboretum, you may be familiar with it. For those who aren't, this is a 1,700-acre museum of trees just west of Chicago. We describe ourselves as champions of trees, and the work at the Arboretum revolves around caring for and protecting woody plants here in Northern Illinois and all over the world, and working with institutions around the world and with the public to raise awareness of the importance of trees and to protect trees. Where do I sit in that world? Many museums operate on sort of a tripod of collections, research, and education, and I sit in the education world. Our education department ranges from programs for 18-month-old children to children with their families to kids in school to teenagers looking to build their experience with the world, to adults at all stages of their lives, college students, professionals entering their careers or advancing their careers, and lifelong learners who want to keep learning more about the world at any stage of their life. I sit on the adult end of that spectrum, so I work with college students, I work with professionals, I work with adult learners, and my job is overseeing the creation of curriculum, the instructors, the support for a wide variety of classes for all of those different types of adults. And we serve between 6,000 and 7,000 adults every year in that role. How did I get there? I started at the Arboretum actually right after my PhD, which sounds very linear, and it really was not linear at all. It was sort of an accident, but there were a lot of pieces along the way that led to that very happy accident. So while I was in school, I was studying biology. I studied biology for my undergraduate. I worked on freshwater mussels and the molecular identification of freshwater mussels as an undergraduate. I tried my hand at grad school. I did go straight into grad school, continued working in marine systems for a rotation, but then started branching out in my rotations and managed to find a rotation with the genetics lab at the Brookfield Zoo, which was a wonderful introduction to the world of research that can happen at cultural institutions. Finally landed in my PhD. Did my PhD on the interactions between plants and the bacteria that make them sick out in the field. I worked on Arabidopsis, which is a little fruit fly of the plant world. Along the way, I knew I liked teaching. I got as much experience teaching as I could along the way, and I found that I really enjoyed teaching, that teaching was really motivating to me, whether it was working with students in the classroom or overseeing students that I worked with in the lab and overseeing undergraduates and high school students in the lab I worked in. And so while I was getting my PhD, it started to become clear that teaching was something I might want to continue to do afterwards. And so I took advantage of the resources at the Center for Teaching and Learning, it was called at the time, and went through most but not all of the graduate school sort of one-year teaching certificate program that they have, or they had at the time. I didn't finish it. I didn't do the final capstone piece because it wasn't in alignment with what I needed to do to get my PhD done at that time. But it still gave me a lot of really good experience, a lot of the right words I needed, a lot of the ways of thinking about curriculum design and education that helped me as I was going, as I ended up making that transition. And then along the way, also, I discovered I needed things outside of my graduate work to balance my life, that I couldn't be 110% in my graduate work all the time. I needed some balance. I needed to get outside a little bit more. This was during a period when I was doing a lot of lab work. And I took a volunteer position at the Chicago Botanic Garden working on their Plants of Concern citizen science program. I did some of the, if anyone knows that program, I did some of the day-to-day monitoring, but I also worked on some of the higher level analysis, putting some of those grad school skills to work in a new situation. And again, a great exposure to the kind of work that could happen at cultural institutions. So when I was looking around, as I was wrapping up my PhD, when I was looking around for jobs, I was looking everywhere. I was talking to the Career Center. I was trying to figure out where the heck I needed to go next. I knew I wasn't completely happy in a straight research path. I was looking at teaching paths. I was looking at government jobs. I was looking at postdocs. And I knew I also liked living in Chicago, and I have family here, and so I wanted, there was some appeal to staying in Chicago, so I was looking really hard at the cultural institutions around Chicago and at the research institutions around Chicago to see just what was available. And when I looked at the Morton Arboretum, there were some research jobs posted, but there was also this job. At the time, it was for a part-time manager of natural history education. But I was still finishing up. I was still writing. A part-time job seemed, in education, getting some more experience there, seemed like a great way to buffer out the experience of writing my thesis and get a little job experience at the same time. So I applied, plus the opportunity to teach botany at a really cool place seemed great. So I applied. It took about 4 months to even get an answer on that application. It took another 3 months in between that first phone call and actually getting the job and a couple of interviews along the way. But that September, I started part-time. I loved it. I finished up my PhD the next spring. I was lucky because my employer was very flexible with me finishing my PhD. My advisor and my committee were willing to put up with it. And I was lucky too because we were able to expand some grant funding to turn that part-time position into a full-time position after I finished my PhD. And I've been there ever since. I've been there for 12 years now. The position has evolved a lot. The scope of my responsibilities has changed dramatically over time, and what I've been working on has changed dramatically. And I can tell you a lot more about that as we go along, but that's my little story.
All right, thank you, Macon. I think it's interesting how, when you look at your career, you started with a position that, you know, it was part-time, right? It suited what you needed at the time. But if you were thinking, I mean, you probably at the time weren't necessarily thinking like, I'm embarking on my career now, you know, I'll be here for 12 years, you know, and it will evolve. But I think that happens a lot in museum work. I think from my own experience, if I hadn't been an intern in the department where I ended up working, it would have been harder to have been off a job. But maybe I was like, oh, I'm dying, you know, to be an intern or something like that. And even once I got hired, I really went, you know, I started out at the very bottom and slowly worked my way up. And sometimes I think the way into a museum can be just start something, and then if you evolve into something else, also as you develop and what you want changes. Lucas, would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Jean. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for inviting me here to talk, and everybody for being on the call. My name's Lucas Livingston. I work at the Art Institute of Chicago. I manage, direct the programming for audiences, in particular, lifelong learning and accessibility. So that is older adult population and individuals with disabilities. Strongly, though, concentrating on how arts and cultural engagement and enrichment can lead to better health, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual health and well-being. So working closely with clinicians, with artists to use arts enrichment as a sort of intervention as really a broad part of people's overall health regime for healthy living and healthy aging. And specifically working with particular historically marginalized populations of people with disabilities, so providing enrichment opportunities at the museum for people who are blind or have profound low vision. So just verbal description programs, working with the deaf community, providing a space for the deaf community, a platform for them to feel empowered to engage and directly respond to and interact with the collection and with their own community. So very often the museum is something like a town square or front porch for the community, where we try to bring in all voices, all perspectives, with just equal and equitable. So, and additionally, I advise broadly across the Art Institute and a national level and around Chicago as well for equitable access for visitors with disabilities. So I have been very involved with Chicago Cultural Accessibility Consortium, founding steering committee members, and that's a great resource for people who are interested in cultural access for people with disabilities, and also with the American Society on Aging, with their lifetime time people counsel. So it's an interesting broad community on sacrocosms, but also the idea, broadly speaking, of accessibility is something that benefits all audiences. Creating an accessible experience is just a universally enriching experience. How did I get involved? I got my degree from the Committee on the Ancient Mediterranean at University of Chicago, a master's degree. So a joint program where I spent a lot of my time in the classics department and the Oriental Institute, concentrating largely on ancient Egyptian and Greek civilizations. And then I thought, well, what am I going to do with this? We're at a museum in my mind prominently throughout my college and graduate education. I had considered, I figured I'm going to be working in academia, but then I had a real change of heart and change of mind and thought available to me. And so actually one of my early mentors, Dr. Emily Teeter at the Oriental Institute, so she advised me, well, you know, go talk to the Art Institute, put me in touch with our curator of ancient art there, Karen Manchester. And so I door that way, and to the point of Megan and Jean were saying, oftentimes it's these baby steps. I started at the Art Institute, curatorial department of ancient art, that was a dream, you know, getting to Kathy's these facts and questions, doing some of my own research, so even drafting acquisition justification reports for certain objects. This was really great. So I fell in love with the museum environment, and then got myself an actual paid gig, which was working in the Asian art department, which was really interesting.
Cut out there a little.
Oh, sorry about that. My first paid gig after my internship was working in the Asian department, Asian art curatorial department, on a special exhibition for the Art of the Himalayas, and which was very interesting because I knew nothing about the Himalayas, all of the Asian world. So that's just something that has never started at the Art Institute, is this profound learning experience. Mm-hmm. And I've been there almost 18 years now and continue.
You agree, Lucas? I think that, for example, even at the, I think I may have caught. I was just going to ask you a question. Can people hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I wonder, you know, Lucas, would you agree? So, you know, what aspect of your degree do you think made you attractive? Do you think it helped you get a foot in the door because you started there in a curatorial department, you know, related to the that you were getting? Or do you think it was more the mentor relationship you had and the opening you got that way?
I think it's in a sense really both. Having a mentor recommend me was very helpful, and that opened up an initial door. And then once so many students ask, "Hey Lucas, how do I get started?" And you know, one way, if you can afford this, is to to volunteer or intern, get your foot in the door. It gives you an inside track to the internal postings. You get to know contacts. You can directly speak to the hiring manager, and so that just certainly opens up doors for you. Now, the idea of interning, so often unpaid internships, I mean that really privileges those who have the resources to be able to survive during an unpaid period of their lives. So one initiative that the Art Institute has been very strongly pushing all unpaid internships over to pay, and so just to create a more equitable environment for advanced emerginals. Yeah.
And I say, you know, another thing I'm struck with when you're talking about your background and the different roles that you had at the Art Institute. I mean, it happens also to me. I have like a very specific specialty in ancient Mesopotamia. And even though it's aligned nicely with the Orient Institute collections, you know, I'm required to know and be interested in knowing about ancient civilizations, you know, from Tunisia to Afghanistan. And I think that certainly having a graduate degree in one area, there is the implication that you'll be capable and that you've developed a skill set where you can move across subjects and kind of get your thing. Would you agree with that? Because it sounds like you went to a couple of very different departments.
Right. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And as much as I have a strong background and concentration in Egypt, Greece, and classical world, I am, all of the educators within the museum are very much considered to be generalists, broad generalists on the collection. And now it's still to this day, though, I mean, I very much have my concentrations and my comfort zones. And so I more often than not find myself in the ancient galleries or in the Asian galleries. However, definitely straying now and again over into the impressionists and modernity and contemporary art. It's kind of a mix. I concentrate in certain areas, but still, in terms of general public programming that I direct and manage, really trying to just be inclusive of the broad museum collection, and often relying on other educators, whether they're volunteer educators or paid professionals, to facilitate a lot of the programs that I manage and direct for the Art Institute. Yeah, I'm not doing all of the teaching for my own programs singularly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you very much. If we could, Heather, could I ask you to go ahead and tell us a little bit about how you ended up in your current position?
And it's great to see. Oh, hi, everybody. My name's Heather. It's great to be connected to you all, even online. And I hope you're all doing well. Great to see so many backgrounds. That's one of the things I love to emphasize. If someone would have told me when I was at graduate school at the University of Chicago, I would be working with marine mammals, lions, not have believed them, which is awesome. I went to SSA, so I saw somebody is on the call from that. That's a shout out. And I did some classes at public policy in the law school on administration and leading a nonprofit organization. I went straight from undergrad to grad school, and then I attended some USC career searches, and I was recruited by a consulting firm. And it sounded exciting and new, and I was very interested in learning more about consulting, so I took that job. It was on 100%, and I was an information technology consultant. I didn't even know how to send an email before I started that job. And I gave it 100%, and it really hard and overwhelming. But I learned an incredible amount of project management skills and corporate America and business skills to be able to bring into the profit sector, which was awesome. So if there's one thing that really useful I found is that whatever any job you're in, taking the skills and the things that you learn there, whether it's how to treat people, how to collaborate, applying those skills in your position certainly helps. So I did information technology consulting for a long time to me, and in the state of, many states, but also then the state specifically of Illinois, and for the Department of Job and Family Services. And I was dying 1,000 deaths. It was really technical, very, very, very technical work. And I started taking improv at the Second City just to have fun because I was dying inside. And one of the people that worked in very senior leadership position was recruited to go work at the Museum of Science and Industry. She wanted to bring in people with different backgrounds to the museum. And a lot of them are thinking differently and intentionally hiring with different backgrounds, in addition to people with these really rich backgrounds, as museums struggle to be relevant and connected and to reach new audiences, we need new thinking. And so I was very fortunate in 2000 and was hired by the Museum of Science and Industry because of my statewide management system work and my skill sets in implementing scale projects, and then my improv background. So Andrew had seen one of my improv shows, knew I did great consulting work, and I would keep those worlds separately for such a long time. I didn't want to know the corporate world. I did this improv as this corporate tech nerd, but they were hiring people. They were looking for someone that had a science or technology and theater background. So I applied. It took 6 months, just like everybody said, long time. I pitched scenes. I talked about using implementation planning skills. And I helped transform the way we engaged guests in science content at the Museum of Science in 2006 until 2000. I was there, I think, 11 years. And I was at Shedd Aquarium to work on their aquatic presentation. And a big part of my work, both were in education positions, I integrated using improvisation as a way to think about how we communicate to our different audiences and how to be most accessible and tailor content on the spot in a group of four-year-olds and 34 or 50-folds. And you can take a lot of those improvisation concepts and apply that. And so I went to Second City where I was taking classes and said, could I take these philosophies and apply them to science and MSI? And they said, yes, please. We need to expand the way in which we engage guests in science. And I had a lot of support. So that was fun. And I've loved it. I since became a faculty member at the Second City through integrating these various philosophies, shifting the way we engage guests. I love it. I'm passionate about it. And then I did accept the job at Shedd in, I think it's been about 3 years now, to change and to get more audience participation in how we reach guests. And then I actually asked to go part-time in June last year and build out my science communication consulting business focused on using improv. And I work a lot with universities. I do workshops at University of Chicago. I saw biological is in there. Some of you may have been in the workshops I've led. But it's focused on using improvisation as a way to better communicate. And I've just had a lot of fun, and I've let my career shaped me and me shape my career. And one thing common with it, I remember my dad came and saw one of my improv shows, and he was like, you're not that funny, but doing what you love and don't quit your day job. And so what's common of what everybody's saying is that, you know, finding doing something you love, whether you're stuck in a lab and you want to get out and see more trees, when you're taking areas they feel they often can bring really big rewards, and it's just really cool. So that's a bit about my background.
Thank you. You know, I have to say I agree very much with what you're saying, because one big thing I started working in a museum very early, but I had said when I was still in graduate school, to this point where I saw the colleagues who were students, and I saw what they were doing, and they were going away and doing archaeological field work and traveling across the Middle East, and I thought it was so exciting. And you know, you're always just sort of forming your ideas about what's available around you. So while I was having, on the one hand, this amazing experience in a museum, I also was like, yeah, but I can't, you know, I'm missing all these other period where, you know, I could just be a student and like get these fellowships and go off and do field work and have all these amazing experiences. But you know, so part of the reason I think why my first museum job, even though I liked it and I'd been there for a long time, I wanted to go back and regroup some of that experience. Mm-hmm. And then that ultimately informed and made me a applicant when I went to get the job that I have now. And so I do think part of me is a little cynical about the idea of like doing love, but I think that it actually is true. You know, we think at a certain point, you know, some you want to eat, you need a place to live, you know. But I think it's so true, though, being able to bring element of what you love when you realize what you love doing, that it just does make a big difference in the kind of career, not only the kind of career you can have, but the way you can shape it, which it sounds like you did.
Yeah, and one time, even when I was taking improv classes, I would have had no idea that that would have ever translated beyond those 3 hours of laughing.
Right.
And it's shaped my career now, and I didn't know it at the time. So there was a big period of uncertainty when I shifted from consulting prior to going to MSI. Mm-hmm. I did some consulting on my own. And so my career hasn't been a complete easy path in time. I think I was waiting tables and I got yelled at in 3 different languages at the same time because I was terrible at that. So I've had to take some risks and to take some steps. But it's I love blending those background, like the things that you learn in one field or in one job, and bringing that. When I came to MSI, I would bring meeting agendas and I would bring some of the business tools I learned. This is so planned and structured and helpful. And so think about whatever your background is and the skills that you have, how can you bring that to a new industry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I would say also this idea of having sort of a business background and a corporate experience is so important. Yeah. Even now, because I'm at the University of Chicago, I took this program at Booth that was sort of every other Friday all last fall. And it was an executive program for people who are at their part level of, you know, sort of where I am. And I just thought, you know, it was interesting because some of my friends and colleagues, and they'd be like, I would never take a course like, but it is true. It didn't seem like it had so much in common with what I was doing, but I can't tell you how valuable it was to just understand. It went through like corporate concepts of leadership and what, you know, qualities people have when they get to, so, you know, and I just found it fascinating. And, you know, so there is that side of things where you have those skills and you bring them to a organization that's not necessarily already thinking that way. It can help sort of change and improve the environment.
Yeah.
But thank you very much. And certainly not, last but not least, Melanie, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself to us.
So hi, thank you to Michael and to everyone for being here. So I'm a curatorial associate at the Block Museum, and this is a museum education panel, but I think I work at it's a smaller museum. We have about 20 people. And so in that environment, the lines between departments are more blurred, I think. So I work in curatorial, but also with collections and engagement. I would say also with the smaller museums, the curatorial, like the curator roles are more generalist too than at somewhere like the Art Institute. A lot of my work is project-based. A lot of it's in the digital realm. So I work websites related to exhibition content. My big recent project is helping set institutional standards for our collections database that's going to be released publicly this fall. And then, you know, as of a few weeks ago, like really trying to think creatively and be nimble about the current situation where the museum doors are closed and thinking about our role as a teaching and learning institution in that environment. So the digital projects have kind of a new weight and direction in some cases at this particular moment. I have a BA in art history from UChicago and a PhD in art history from the University of Michigan. My specialization is medieval manuscripts, 13th to 15th century French manuscripts. And I think a few experiences led to my current, it's still evolving, but also there's some things that are in common with other people on the panel. And you can see that it's like there are deliberate choices and also things that happen kind of organically. So in addition to, like, when I was in graduate school, I had a summer internship at the Art Institute of Chicago and enjoyed that in curatorial. And then I took an internship in the curatorial department, the Department of Manuscripts at EDI also, which is similarly to you at the Met, it was like a full-time 9-month position. And it was really important to me just, I think, to learn that I liked working with the different kinds of people that you find in a museum. So I liked working with preparators and with designers and with curators with other specializations, with educators. And I also learned that I actually kind of like a 9-to-5 structure. So that was always in the back of my mind. I finished a dissertation, and then I did have a period of unemployment before landing a postdoc at a small liberal arts college. And be a generalist at a smaller college, and so that was also useful information for me. But when the appointment came to an end, I decided it was important for me to learn about myself that I wanted to choose where I wanted to live. So I'm putting that personal decision out there as part of my career choice, and that I had missed working at a museum. My partner had a job in Chicago, and we had both gone to undergrad here, so it was a nice place to land. And you know, my partner had a job that could pay our rent during the months when I was living, and allowed me to explore some of the public humanities opportunities that were here in Chicago. So one was I taught for the Odyssey Project for a couple of years, and this is a project through Illinois Humanities for a program for adults with barriers to accessing college education. So I taught art history through them, and I also became a contract educator in learning and public engagement at the Art Institute of Chicago. I ended up working at the Block Museum with these kind of engagement experiences in my pocket. My first job at the Block was filling in for a colleague who was on maternity leave. And then when she came back, another position opened. That was a 1-year position. And then in that time, another position opened. So similarly to those stories. I think I'll end there, but if anyone has questions about that, I'm open to them.
All right, great. Thank you so much. Yeah, I think, you know, it's fascinating. So many times when I talk to people who are currently working in museums, the background, even if you stay at one institution, the background, there's a lot of moving around, and it's often just getting your foot in the door that then creates its own opportunities later, which I think is really interesting. I just wanted to bring up that we're about 45 minutes into our panel. And if there are any questions from everybody listening in, we'd love to hear from you. So if you just open the Q&A field and you can send us any questions that you have. But I think that we can continue discussing also now, and that I just have some questions that I'd like to ask people. And the thing I did want to recognize, you know, now, of course, we're living in extraordinary times. We're all on a stay-at-home order for the rest of April. There's a lot, unemployment is already skyrocketing. The arts are gonna get, arts and cultural institutions are gonna get hit super hard by these events. And I just wondered if people felt like sharing a little bit what the climate is like where you're working. One thing I'll just start, for me, one thing I'm incredibly grateful about is the fact that I'm in a museum, but this museum is housed, you know, here at the University of Chicago. And so we're under the umbrella of a much larger institution. And so I do feel some of the stability and the advantage available from that being the case. But I don't know if anybody else wanted to share a little. And I will say that I have colleagues, even a field museum, which again is a very large institution, and they're all of course home, but I know that there have been some cuts there already of about 10% with communications letting people know that, you know, there will probably have to be layoffs at some point. So, you know, it's a scary time. For us, so just, you know, if anybody wanted to share anything about what they think about what the current climate is like just because of the pandemic and that sort of thing, I think that might be something people are interested in.
Yeah, one perspective I'll chime in with is I think just in terms of having to, in one sense, trying to redefine the museum, or especially how we serve the community, how we engage with the community, and vice versa. And in one regards, with a lot of our modes of engagement, and we already prioritize interacting with historically marginalized populations, and so in one sense, that marginalization is only augmented by the current pandemic. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing a lot of disparity in access to resources. And so I think even throughout the course of in better times, a large portion of the audience that I serve are people who living in a state that we all now find ourselves in. So living in extreme isolation at home, mm-hmm. older adult individuals who the most social contact they have with people or might be going to church, which is now not available to them, going to their senior center or public library, which they cannot do now, or at best maybe once a week seeing the Meals on Wheels delivery person. Mm-hmm. And so now how do we reach them year round, and especially now where we're even more profoundly isolated. So yeah, a lot of museums are stumbling to try to figure out how to take a lot virtual, but then that alone itself, again, feeds into a certain privilege, those who have broadband internet access, right, yeah. and technological know-how. So even just some connections over the telephone is a lot of what we're doing as well. So that's really more speaking to public engagement side of thing. But the atmosphere internally within museums is certainly a different realm right now.
Right. Thank you. We do have a couple of questions here. So why don't I go ahead and pose one? So we have a question for any of you in positions where you've been responsible for hiring. If so, what kind of experiences, qualifications do you look for in potential employees? I can go ahead and start by offering an answer, and then if anybody else wants to chime in, please do. I started my job at the Oriental Institute in the fall of 2016, and the museum itself was already in the middle of a gallery reinstallation that had to be done by fall 2019 because that was the kickoff of our centennial celebrations. So we turned 100 in 2019. And so I had to hire a bunch of extra people because I needed an outside team that I could bring in that could help out with some of the massive quantities of work that had before us. And then also along the way, I had to hire, so these were temporary, but for 2 to 3 years, contract employees. And then I also hired full-time employees. I think I've hired now 4. For me, coming from a museum round at a large, you know, universal museum, like the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I think because I've had that background myself, I placed a lot on the types of institutions people had already been working at. And so I did look for people who had any kind of position, but at big places, because I wanted people to have had just, this is partially my own thinking. It's probably by no means universal, but I want to know that people had had an experience at a big, important, you know, cultural institution. So even for Chicago, it'd be like the Field Museum or MSI or the Art Institute. I wanted them to understand the resources and the potential, just the kind of work you can do when you have a lot available to work with. And so for me, it was important to see that background. And I also, we were under this deadline. I needed people who could get up and running immediately. And to tell you the truth, I mean, it's a challenging market to get your foot in the door and to get a job. So, you know, I hired a designer who I worked with for 3 years. And I mean, she was amazing. She had worked at the Field Museum. She had done, been the lead on certain exhibition hall reinstallations. And then she had also gone on to design the exhibition space at the 9/11 Memorial in New York. So she had amazing credentials. And then when I met her, I liked her. And then she had been working with three or four people at the Field Museum who, for some of the projects they had been doing, they were freelance and they'd been hired. And so I felt like already this team in place that had credentials that be led one, and I brought in some of the other people she had worked with, and I liked them a lot, and they had these great experiences a lot at the Field Museum, and I brought in and that ended up working out really well. You know, the other aspect people don't talk about a lot when you bring someone in this case when we brought in a team, is to try to assess, without fully knowing people, whether this is someone who's going to be able to get along, be part of the team that already exists, and is going to be able to help you get this job done, basically in the way you see it carrying out. And so, you know, for that, I really relied on everybody who was already working at the OI. And so I got these candidates that would come in to meet as many people as they could so that we could all talk about the action that we'd had with this person. So just to spend some time with them. So I'd say it was credentials that led them to have an interview. But then at that point, there was also a lot involved in personality and presentation and trying to assess whether we could see ourselves working with this person, whether we thought they could just hit the ground running. Because like I said, we were under a deadline. I don't know if anyone else wants to experience.
For me, I do quite a lot of contractors. Many of our teachers are full-time and full-staff. And technical skills, for me, it doesn't necessarily have to come from a museum background. Wherever you get the job is fantastic. Project management skills, skills in curriculum design, skills in creating experiences. I'm looking for evidence that you can do those things that I need you to do, previous evidence of comfort with technology, comfort with databases, comfort with building programs online, because we do a lot of online learning. So I'm looking for all those technical skills. I'm looking for something in your resume that shows me that you're excited about what we do, that some indication of connection to a cultural institution and experience there is one way of showing that, but also just experience with education and experience with the outdoors, since we're an museum. I'm looking for that as well, as possible pieces of the puzzle, some clue that you're passionate about the things that will help you succeed in the job. And I'm also definitely looking for some of those soft skills. I'm looking for somebody who likes working in teams and is willing to work with others, willing and excited about working with others on a project towards a common goal. I'm definitely looking for someone who can multitask and someone who, while multitasking, can still keep that commitment to bring really excellent products. And that comes through in the resume and just in your presentation and your cover letter, and a lot of that comes through in the in-person conversation as well, and in the conversations with references, understanding how you work with other people and how those communication skills play out for you and your ability to collaborate with other people plays out.
Thank you. Let's keep going. We have a couple of questions now. I'll go to the next one. Do the panelists have any suggestions for the best ways to get started in the job hunt in this field? Would someone else like to start off answering? Okay, Melanie.
Happy to start with that. In deciding to choose a location and not moving for a job, I reluctantly took the advice of the Career Center at the University of Michigan and wrote people to have coffee. I actually had coffee with Lucas, early people I had coffees, but it helped to understand the landscape of a place. People are typically generous and they're honest and frank about, give you really great advice about resources that exist in a particular field. It's also how I knew about gigs that got me started. So it was kind of a foot in the door, and through those gigs, people could understand me better in Chicago, if that makes sense. I think people tend to be generous. It's scary to reach out and do that. At worst, people don't respond to you because they're so busy. But that was sort of my method.
Can't emphasize that enough. And I was too reluctant. I was like, I'm not going to network. I'm just going to get all these jobs, not by who I know, but just by my credentials. And that was very immature thinking. The networking provided me a broader range to check in. It also informed me more of what my strike zone was or what experiences I needed. And then now, because I do in MSI, and when I was full-time at Shed, bulk hiring and so much hiring for part-time, full-time. And it was helpful to me as a director of large teams when recommendations would come in to me about a person and when people would be able to speak to their character and work ethic. And so that networking not only provides you as the applicant, it can help you get in a foot in the door, make some networks, but it also can provide the organization when you get thousands of applicants in or hundreds. They know what they're looking for, but it can help them too, bring in people that know of people that are great team players and great, that have great work ethic. So I can't say enough of that. Setting up informational interviews, coffee chats, asking the people that you do know if they know people in organizations, being proactive to look at the hiring managers and seeing if you have connections there, can just go a long way.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. And then I would say also to the people who are watching and listening to this panel, I mean, you're in a great position if you're about to graduate, just because of some of the postdoc and internship and fellowship experiences you can apply for at different museums. And like we've all been saying, I mean, so I was working in a museum, right? I left a museum from 2008 to 2016. I said I had an itinerant background. I was doing things, you know, 1 year or 2 years at a time. And you can get to this point. I mean, you just get tired and you think like, am I going to really move to this place for 1 year for this fellowship? What's going to happen at the end of the year? But sometimes, you know, things that were 1 year would turn into 2 years, then they turn into three. I mean, you just don't know. And one thing I would say, I was probably too literal when I looked at the opportunities that were available, because things can sometimes be more than they seem at first glance. So, you know, you're on soft money, it's a part-time job. They don't really know if they're going to be able to fund you after 4 or 6 months, you know, but once you're there, you just don't know what's going to happen. And sometimes, you know, great things can come out of it.
I'd love to just jump in. Can I just say this one stat? Women, I just led a women webinar. Am I still there or no?
There's an interesting call.
Women are only likely to apply for positions if they meet 100% of the criteria, and men are more likely to apply for a position even if they only meet 40 or 50% of criteria. This is from Harvard Business Review. So I just want to encourage people. I love what you mentioned about being literal. Apply for it and decide later. Go for it. Look at the similarities in which you do have. Emphasize that. Because again, I'm working with marine mammals every day, and I had none of that experience prior to starting at Shed.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely would agree. I think it's also, it's important to think creatively about the experiences you've had and how they can match the questions you're being asked in the interview. That's another thing where I think early on I was way too literal. And, you know, and I would be sitting in these interviews, and remember when I interviewed for the job I have now, people, this committee asked me, you know, like, what kind of leadership experiences have you had? You know, do you have administrative experience? Have you managed people? How many people have you managed? But, you know, I was, at the time I was teaching in Germany, and I was kind of doing a more academic job. I wasn't, you know, that it was just, you know, one of the faculty, but then, you know, I was like, well, you know, I tried to think of things that, you know, that to just provide some kind of an answer. And I really, you know, I was like, well, I manage a reading group. It consists of 12 graduate students, and I'm part of this circle of young academic, you know. And so, and I realized as I was talking, you know, on the one hand, I think there is like the imposter syndrome. Can I really say this? And I think you're right. Typically women would feel more like, I can't say this, which is something to overcome. And I think that, you know, if you can think creatively about the experiences you've had, you can translate them in a way where people can understand, rather than just getting in a situation where you're like, nope, you know, something like that.
I hired a woman from Brown. I said, what's your leadership experience? And she's like, and she kind of did that. She said, oh, I was the captain of my ultimate Frisbee team.
Right.
And I thought, great, you can lead people. And she was fabulous. And yeah.
Just kind of really practical nuts and bolts information just on where, how to begin a job search, where to go. Just a couple things is that there are, I mean, dedicated museum job boards out there, multiple. They're the big one, of course, the American Alliance of Museums, but also the Midwest Museums, Association of Midwest Museums has its own job board. Often they're cross postings, but one advantage of the Association of Midwest Museums is that any posting there, they mandate that it also include the salary range. The Alliance website does not mandate that. So, and I think increasingly there's strong conversations within the museum world, among museum culture, that it's almost irresponsible not to include a salary range in your posting. And it's a waste of both the institution's mm-hmm. time and anybody who's applying for a job, because you might get a slew of unqualified applicants or likewise. You might be applying for a job that sounds great, but it's way beneath your current salary range. But then also, I encourage everybody to subscribe to different professional association job board, not just job boards, sorry, but listservs. A lot of job postings come through the listservs. Likewise, the American Alliance of Museums has a listserv. There's a new dedicated museum education listserv. There are a whole bunch of different, even also for cultural accessibility, there are some listservs there as well. So those are just great ways to not only see postings, but just to get a real more insider's perspective on the conversations that are happening within museum culture.
And I'll put out there also, folks are interested in careers on the environmental side of things, there is a Chicagoland Environmental Network page and job board that a lot of different kinds of institutions that work around the environment post on. And the Chicago Wilderness Alliance is a network of organizations that work with the environment in the Chicago area, over 200 organizations strong, and that's another great place to network and to get connected to that environmental world. I'll drop a couple of those links into the chat.
All right, great. Thank you. I think that I'll keep going. We have another question that asks, can you speak a little bit about pursuing careers at art museums with a degree outside of the humanities, especially in high expertise departments like curatorial? You know, Melanie, would you want to speak to that perhaps?
Sure. I think it really depends on the institution you're looking at, I would say. Somewhere at the Art Institute, they're going to look, if they're hiring curatorial, they're going to look with someone for someone with a degree in a particular, in a specific field that that department's hiring in. In a smaller place like the Block Museum, you know, we have a curator of collections who has a master's in history. Mm-hmm. It's probably a little more flexible. And because some of the curatorial posts, like I'm in curatorial, but I'm kind of a generalist, right? So I think it depends on the nature of the post and the type of institution that you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'll just say also, since I have an art museum background, that absolutely, it depends on the institution. When I worked at the Metropolitan Museum, we literally wouldn't look at people who applied for curatorial jobs unless they had an advanced degree in art history, and that would usually be a PhD. You know, and I think a lot of that also had to do with this kind of self-consciousness about art history being its own academic discipline, as opposed to something people just enjoy looking at or might pursue as, you know, like a gentlemanly profession back in the old, on the old model and that sort of thing. But I would say, you know, for example, where I work now at the Oriental Institute Museum, people often actually make the mistake of thinking that we're an art museum, but really, I mean, we're a museum that, you know, we feature art, archaeology, ancient history. So, you know, there's an where I work that we would only hire an art historian, and that's not true at all. We would look at people with backgrounds in Near Eastern languages and civilizations. Someone could have a strong language background, but a lot of experience working with objects, an anthropologist, a historian. If they had that kind of degree that didn't necessarily suggest objects and artifacts, we would look to their work experience, and that would allow us to become interested in a candidate like that. So
I think the job descriptions might, you can kind of read into them whether they're hiring for a skill set or a knowledge base or both.
Right. Here's another question. Do you feel it would be difficult to transition back into an academic research role from a museum education role? Is there someone who would like to take on that question about transitioning back into academics and research from museum education?
Frankly, working for, I don't know, going on almost 20 years now of trying to make the access and interpretation of complex multi-layered works of art, trying to make that accessible to a very public general audience. I don't know how to write in an academic style anymore. So, you know, maybe not the answer you're looking for, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I would add to that also, I think there is, I see this attitude a little bit with grad students that I work with at my museum. And there can be different attitudes that people bring. And sometimes people will feel, I think when they're starting on their career, you know, you go to graduate school. I was this way too. You go to graduate school, you get a PhD. I think you're really taught to think, I want the faculty job. You know, I want to go into academics. I mean, that's what the success of the entire model is sort of predicated on, the idea that the academic tradition continues. But I think, you know, it's so hard, and I'll talk to graduate students these days who sometimes will end up, you know, doing work in my museum. And, you know, I think it's so difficult to get employment in museums these days. It's not really realistic to think that successfully obtaining museum employment could really be an alternative to, like, if the faculty thing's not working out. I mean, it's just, you know, they can end up being very different things or similar things. And, you know, I think if you really think that you enjoy an academic research side of things, but you think that you also like to work in museums, it kind of depends on the place. Because I know, for example, at the Field Museum, the curators have cross appointments at universities, you know, so there that can work. You know, I'm at in the Oriel Institute. The Oriel Institute is part of the University of Chicago. So, you know, depending how tightly you want to insist on maintaining that connection, you can or you can't. But you shouldn't necessarily, in my opinion, think that you're looking at a really viable alternative if X doesn't work out, because you're sure going to end up investing, in my opinion, a lot of energy and effort and a lot of your work life, because it doesn't happen overnight. You've heard these stories of everybody starting out. It was like an internship, a part-time job, a fellow, you know, and it grew and evolved. So I do think they end up becoming increasingly separate, but you definitely have to have the academic credentials to get into the museum in the first place. But I don't know, other people might have different opinions.
Yeah. Well, just also, I mean, kind of an unfortunate aspect of both academia and the museum work is that so many people who are involved are really on a contract basis. And so the number of full-time positions are very few, part-time, but then also, contract. And so, right, a lot of our contract educators are also adjunct faculty. And so there's definitely that strong crossover there.
Megan, did you want to add anything?
For the folks in our research department, I have seen much more movement back and forth between academia or being university and museum-based research. I've seen more of that fluidity there, but those are definitely research jobs. Mm-hmm. For me, that's one of the things I really enjoy about the part of the museum world I'm living in, is the chance to still have that connection to research, to still engage with primary research that's going on and be able to share that out with the world a little bit more broadly. And so for me, I am able to scratch some of that itch within the position, and that's been great for me. I think where I'm at now, just as you've said, after being in education for 12 years, translating back to biological research would require a lot of scaffolding and a lot of choices. I have seen folks go from education positions to small liberal arts college teaching positions as well. But I think, again, it's the combination of skills and interests you bring and you find over time that lead you where you go next, just as you're saying, that the things you learn along the way about yourself will help show you where you need to be going next. And some of those things you'll see early on, and some of those things you'll learn later. And just depending on where you're at with that, new realms of possibility will open up as well.
Okay, I think we have time probably for one more question. And so I'm gonna go with one theme kind of related to what we're talking about already, rather than being a whole new topic in the limited time left. So this question, for those in science-related institutes, can you speak to the difference between education and sciences and the degrees experience that facilitate a good working relationship?
I can jump in. Am I?
Yep.
One of the things when I started at MSI was looking at the type of person. Is, do we hire educators? Do we hire people that can age? And we helped shift the thinking. We were hiring mostly guest-facing team members and leaders of those teams. And we helped find and learn that you can teach some of the content to those presenting the content, but having a good way to engage and good teamwork skills, and then learning the content. And I see that more and more, especially with people that studied or learned one specific discipline, but they're able to go into different environments and different sciences and learn those sciences and learn the conservation. And that's certainly been the case. The things I've learned about marine mammal training and Pacific white-sided dolphins has been tremendous. I learned about science and climate change, not having those backgrounds were tremendous. And so I think being open to constantly learning more, which has been what has kept me in these thriving environments, because I love to learn and I love to learn new content, is most important. And being respectful of those disciplinaries and sharing. There's a lot of research on teams right now, and what makes the best teams are people with different backgrounds. And so I think it's, if you come to the table with strong plans, how can you collaboration or presentation or engagement skills? And if you come with a strong education or engagement, how do you embrace the science and the need there and the knowledge needed there? And so you are learning and hiring.
Well, Heather, thank you, because that's almost a perfect note to end on. Because there are journals following this one, but I just wanted to thank you for sharing their experiences, and for those of you that also tuned in to watch and listen to us, and I hope that we were able to share some of our background and experiences with you in a way that was meaningful to you. Michael, did you want to jump in with anything before we sign off?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Sure. Well, I just want to thank you all. Thank you all the panelists. Thank you, Jean, for moderating. And to the audience, thanks for joining us. And if you have questions about next steps, feel free to get in touch with UChicago grad. We're here to support you with anything related to your career development. So thanks again to the panelists and the moderator.
All right. Thank you very much. And thank you, everybody.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you, everybody. Bye, everyone, for participating. Thank you, everyone else.
Thank you. Michael, I have no idea if we're signed up for the individuals.